I have one guy I want to share today, so I'm going to call him right away. David Winter, and he's from Tallahassee, Florida, South America. And, you know, our winters have been colder since you've been here. So you're bringing... No. We had to get his truck started. We got home late yesterday afternoon, and his truck was piled up with snow, and battery wasn't doing so good, and we had to jump it, get it going. But he's up and running. It didn't start again this morning, but he called, and Joel brought him in. So, David, it was fun to be with David the whole time, these 3 weeks, but he's got way more to share than I do, so.
Where do we begin? Imagine our last week in Jerusalem. We got a motel room in the, the number for the door was 666-242. I just let the pastor, I let him do it. I really got a big job this morning. Israel's not big, but there's so many places to see. And it was just a privilege going over there. I thought the trip would be good, but wow. It was just beyond my expectations. We have a real faith set in a real land, built around real circumstances that actually happened. I guess the Hindus, the Buddhists, I guess those people can go to their place. But I thought I knew what antiquity was, and I thought I knew what old things were until I got there. And the first day, I was just kind of lost. I was just kind of looking around. It's like, wow, this is a different culture altogether. And then the second morning, I just kind of clicked in. I said, okay, this is it. On the way over, the Jewish lady on the plane, we got there to the airport in Winnipeg? No, Toronto. And I said, Adam, are those Jewish people? And he said, yes, Doc, they're Jewish people. You're getting on an airplane going to Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv's in Israel. So I said, well, I guess they are. I'm from South America. You have to put up with it. Well, she had something wrong. I was tired because I worked till 4:30 on Thursday and we left on Friday. So the plane took off. You know, I hadn't flown in a while. And your rear end gets kind of grabbing hold when they take off. But she had a cough. And she woke me up 8 times on the way to Tel Aviv. This Jewish lady woke me up 8 times. I remember I laid my head down and went right off to sleep, and she said, ah! So I woke up, and I said, okay. I laid down again, and she said, ah! She woke me up. So I laid down again. She woke me up. So... she woke me up 8 times on the way to Tel Aviv, and when the plane landed, actually as we were going down the runway, she said, so, it's quite a pilot to fly a plane from Toronto to Tel Aviv, because it takes about 12 good hours, and that thing is just booking all the way. So I got to Israel. I was kind of tired, but I want you to know that this pastor here watched over me the whole time. He served me. My knees hurt a lot of places that we went, he gave me Advil every morning. He watched over me. He said, he said, David, how are you doing? He gave me Advil. He watched over me. And I appreciate it. And he preached, well, he didn't preach, but he shared with people over there about love. And I'm telling you, our pastor made a difference in two or three good situations. Let's see. We wanted to just see the sights and be with the people, and we did both. And Adam really has a set of friends over there. When he stands up here and says, I have a set of relationships in Israel, you can really believe him, because he really does, with believers and unbelievers. But I made a list of the places that we saw. We saw the Wailing Wall, the Temple Mount, the Tunnels of Hezekiah, the Pool of Siloam, the Mount of Olives, Solomon and David's Quarters, the Markets of Jerusalem, Joppa, let's say the Mount of Transfiguration, the Mount of Beatitudes, the Sea of Galilee, which is just awesome. The territory around the Sea of Galilee is just beautiful. Miss Candy said that was one of her favorite places. We saw Masada. And Adam told me, Doc, let's go down to the Sea of Galilee tomorrow and you can walk on the water. And I said, I'll be right behind you. We got one of his friend's house named Rami. And we're laying there resting, and the door opens and it flies open, and this Jew says, Adam, why you not tell me you coming? Adam, why you not tell me you coming? I could have got here earlier. Adam, you my friend. And I said, gee, what is this? And Adam said, well, you shut up and come over here and give me a hug, sir. The Jews are, some of them know good English, but some of them are a little broken. And they come up to you in the marketplace and say, are you Jew? Are you Jew? They want to put some stuff on your head or wrap something around your hand so you can pray better. But there's the Orthodox Jews are there, and they're the people that have the hair hanging down on their heads. And then Christian believers, just all kind of people. We sat in the marketplace one night after we ate, and just people watched. We just watched the people. Just mesmerizing for about 45 minutes. And Louis, the Israeli soldiers are everywhere. Groups of 15 or 20 are walked by, and they're so young and so beautiful. They're 18 and 19 years old, and there are girls in there. There'll be about 10 boys, and there'll be a couple of, I should say, young ladies. And they look like they would book you. I don't want to mess with those people, but they have a common influence on the environment, because there's tension in the air. When we went up to the Dome of the Rock, that's a Muslim mosque. It didn't bother me a bit. And Steve said, there's the Eastern Gate, Doc. There's the Eastern Gate. I said, down there. And he lined it up with his hand. And when you come to the Eastern Gate, it's right in, well, it's locked up now because the Muslims put bricks and mortar over it. And they put a graveyard out there on the hill because, when Christ comes back, he's going to walk through that graveyard, and they think he will be, you know, so holy and sanctified and set apart that he won't walk through the graveyard. So they're trying to block his return. And the graveyard is ugly. We call it Cat Litter Mountain. So we stood on the Mount of Olives, which is an awesome experience. We looked down onto Jerusalem. And then the next day, we went over to Solomon's Quarters, where Solomon and David had their quarters, and we looked down into the valley of Kidron, and Pastor said, "Doc, do you see that little path down there? And when you look down into the valley, you can see it just as plain as day. There's a path starting on that side and going to that side." And he said, "This is where they walked Christ when they came to the Garden of Gethsemane and got him. This is where they walked him." So you're standing there looking. And then we went up to the household of Caiaphas, the high priest, which is where they began to abuse Christ and beat him. Then we went out into the courtyard where Peter denied him, and there's a big statue out there, and people were, you know, gathered around that. A little courtyard, probably about two times as big as our stage here. So there you're looking at the place where Christ was betrayed. Peter denied him. And then there's a set of steps coming up that they actually led Christ up when they brought him up out of the Kidron Valley. So you're sitting there 5 feet away, and there's the steps that Christ walked up. And it's a life-changing experience. And we're not sure in that house where they began to abuse him, but it was in that house. And I don't know where they took him after that. Pontius Pilate, we didn't see all the places. We saw Dan, where they set up the golden calf. King Jeroboam, for some reason, thought he was Lot Allah, and he set up a golden calf so the people wouldn't go back to Jerusalem. When we first got there, we stayed with Tali and Daniel, and they're Jewish believers, and they had to leave their apartment because they're having some legal problems. And the believers in Israel are just like folks here. They're struggling. They have their struggles. They have their trials. So we stayed there and prayed with them a little bit and went out to eat with them. And we gave them a contribution, which from this church, and it helped them. And where did we go? We went up to Romney and Gabi's house. Okay, that place, I've been everywhere. I ran out of space here to write down all the places, but we were in Jerusalem, and we went north. We went up by the Sea of Galilee and stayed with Adam's friends named Romney and Gabby. And she's an artist, and she plays the harp. And there was a lady in that town called Ali Sheva, and she writes real anointed songs. And she sat down at the piano and played one for us, and the Spirit of God fell like two notes after she hit the piano, the Spirit of God fell. And she said, "I came from Boston, and I live in Israel, but my home church is Mount Zion Church in Bemidji, Minnesota. I consider that my home church." And I know y'all don't know her or anything, but she considers this her church family. And she's having to stay over there for tax reasons or something, but we tried to talk her into coming here and being with us for a month and worshiping with us and, you know, teaching us those things. She doesn't like commercialism. I think she's been approached several times to, you know, you could be up there. They have all these things over there where people come together and worship, and they want her to get up there, and she just doesn't feel a calling to do it. She called it something. It's selling out to the world or something like that. Our Bible studies over there together were very tremendous. And I can honestly say we didn't say a cross word to each other in 3 weeks. God was with us. And I got up one morning and I said, "Lord, where do you want us to go today?" And he said, "Go to Deuteronomy 18. And then we discussed some things out of there. It's kind of an unusual scripture. Then we went up to see a Jewish girl that Adam knows named Jenny. And she's the most intense Jewish person you've ever seen. And she said, I can't live if I'm not in this land. And so many people over there shared with us about how God called them back to the land. And then they got saved. You know, and coming back to the land, people say it's political Zionism. All that was politics. It was not politics. And Gabi was living in Switzerland and said, if I'm going to find God in this life, I've got to go to Israel. And she went to Israel, and somehow she got saved. Then she met her husband. But since 1880, God has been calling Jews back to that land. And the third day I was there, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. The nations of the world are fighting over this piece of property, but that nation belongs to the Jews. And you can say what you want. That nation belongs to the Jews. And if I have to acknowledge the Jews, what does that cost us as Gentiles? That the Jews love Israel. That hasn't cost me a nickel. So there's a lot of stuff coming concerning the Jews in the land. It's the number one problem today. But when we were up in, we went down into the desert. Well, this Tiberias, we met with this Jewish lady, and she was telling us, I think her parents perished in the Holocaust. But she's talking about she ended up, in Argentina. And then I don't know when she met that fella, but she was real talkative. From the time you walked into the door to the time you left, she was talking. But it was good. And they bring juice to you and coffee to you and fruit to you. Then they bring you more fruit. Then they bring you more crackers. Then they bring you more ham. No, not ham. Lord. No, they didn't bring any ham. Everywhere you go, you barely finish the last. You want some more? Well, so they bring juice and just they keep piling it up. But she was in Argentina, and the Lord said, go back to Israel, go back to Israel. And I heard that everywhere. I'm called to be in this land. And even unbelievers will tell you that. But she made her way back to Israel, and in 1959 was sitting in a little convent reading a tract and got saved probably 4 or 5 years after she came back to the land. So that tells me for sure that God is calling those people back. And they're just real proud of their land. We went out to see a farmer, and I don't even know where. Kadesh Barnea, right near the Egyptian border, and they just have rows and rows and rows and rows of crops. And he took us in and showed us his peppers, red peppers and green peppers and yellow peppers, and they're twice as big as in the United States, and they don't use any spray on them. And if you go, it's enclosed, and you can't just go up there and go in. They make you take your clothes, not take your clothes off. They make we didn't do that to go in, but the workers have to change clothes and put on something sanitary because they don't know where they've been, and they don't want anything in there. And there's a bad bug in there that eats up things, so they release a good bug in there to eat up the bad bug, but they don't release too many of the good bugs because you don't want too many of the good bugs. So they've got it down to a science, and they monitor each row. And how many plants come off of each row, and how many came off last year, the size. And he took us to see spice rows of barley and parsley and thyme, and it took him about 4 hours, his eyes were real wide. He's saying, "We Jews, we come to the desert, we make something out of it." And he was just so friendly and outgoing, and he made us taste each spice and say, "What is that?" I'd say, "I don't know, I recognize it. It tastes familiar, but I don't know." He'd say, Come on, guys. You're from America. Come on, guys." And so we got a couple of them right, but most of them we got wrong. But then we rented a tour guide for a day. I'm sorry, we did a bunch over there. We rented the tour guide, and he took us way, 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 way out in the wilderness that there was just nothing but just barren hills and rock. And then we came up on an oasis that was just green trees were just everywhere, right smack dab in the middle of the desert. And he said, "Now come with me," and he took us over there, and there was water coming up out of the ground. So I actually saw streams coming up in the desert. And that place was like being on the moon, and the wind was blowing, and it was dusty. It was just like a movie. And this guy, before we went out there, he took us to see his horses, and he hugged his horses and kissed them and talked in their ear. He was really a horse whisperer. And he said the ground was full of petroleum. And the ground didn't look very healthy, but he said that this ground on both sides of us is very healthy. And the Jews, what they do, they take 6 inches of topsoil off, and then they do their planting. And he said, "Look at the fields beside you, and just as far as you can see, there's just excellent fields of crops." And they treat each plant like it was a little kid. So when the Jews came, they made the desert blossom. They really did. We saw the house of Simon the Tanner where Peter was on the roof, and he saw the sheet come down. And I kept telling Brother Steve, "When are we going to do something interesting?" But we were actually standing on the guy's back veranda, the little porch, and Joppa's just a beautiful city. It's all lit up. The Mediterranean Sea's there, and the Mediterranean Sea is clear like the water in your sink. And we said, is the household of Simon the Tanner around here? Where did Peter see those sheets coming down?" He said, "Oh, that's about 500 meters from here. You can walk there in 8 minutes. Me and Steve looked at each other, and I said, "When are we going to do something interesting?" But we walked down there and saw where Peter was on the house was closed, but we saw where the sheet came down, and Peter was told to go to the household of Cornelius. But down in the desert, we stayed with a person named Kelly and Yaron, and Yaron's parents were in the Holocaust, and he's 55 years old, and his wife from South Africa. And they're the most open people you've ever, just wonderful believers. And down the street was two Islamic people named Mohammed and Anwar. And we walked up there, and the Spirit of God was all over those people. And they've showed a little interest, and they want Yaron to come and do something with them. And we had a church meeting there on Saturday night at Kelly and Yaron's house. And the door opened, and young people came in from India, and young people came in from Korea, and the Jews came in, or they were there. And when I say Jews, I just mean that in a very, and the thing is, they started singing, and glory came down, and they were so happy. And they sang that song, I will call upon the Lord, for he is worth. It was so anointed. The singing was so happy and joyful. It's like you were back in the Jesus Movement days where everything was just happiness and joy. Bob, you should have heard the harp player. And I think she let us take, when we were there by the Sea of Galilee, she let us take the harp upstairs, a little one. So me and Steve clanked around on that thing for about 2 days. And gee, he's kind of good. Let's see, where am I at? Oh, we went to see these Bedouins that somehow Adam knew these Bedouins, and they're like sort of like the outcasts of society. They're at the low end of the scale. And not one of them was a believer. And when we came in, they had us sit down on couches. You're not sitting in a chair, you're reclining. And they brought us tea, then they brought us coffee, then they brought us food, then they brought us Coke, then they brought us lemonade, then they brought us coffee, then they brought us more snacks, then they brought some more snacks, then they brought some more tea, then they brought some more coffee, then they brought some more snacks. So when you're in the Bedouin home, you do like the Bedouins. You eat and stuff. And one of them lived in the West Bank and has to have permission to come into Israel. His name was Joseph, and he was kind of closed up a little bit, kind of hard. But his brother got saved, named Ali, and Adam wanted to see Ali, but that kind of turned Joseph off in the past. So Joseph had a dream about a man in white, and a tour bus was going by one day, and Joseph ran out there and stopped the tour bus and told the guy that had been witnessing to Ali, "I'm not mad at you anymore. You can go in there and see my brother." So we're all adults here. So he was talking to Adam, and Adam said, "I have a baby now." And he says, "You know how to make a baby?" And Adam said, "Sir, yeah, I think I do. Don't you have a daughter?" And the Arab found out he had used the wrong word to speak to Adam about that, so he was real embarrassed about that. But it kind of broke the atmosphere, and we had a joyful time with those Bedouins who are at the low end of society. None of them are believers, and they want us to come back and share with them. And they asked me to pronounce one of them's name. They said his name is Rockley. Said, "Oh, guy there doesn't say nothing. Sit up." So I sat up and started talking to him, and they said, "Can you say his name?" And I said, "Broccoli." And they thought that was funny. I called him a vegetable. So his name was Roxley, however they say that. But we had a wonderful time of fellowship with them, and they weren't even believers. So I think we left, and they're going to South Africa, and there was some money that was given to them. So we go back up to Jerusalem, and that's where we get the 66624 dude. Door code, so I let the pastor press it each time. But we went to Hebron, which is where Abraham first came, and there are hills and stuff there where Caleb told Joshua, we can take it. So you're actually sitting there looking at those very hills, and Jesse, King David's father, is buried up there. So we had a tour guide come who was a real special guy, a real good believer. So we went up this steep path up to see where they think Jesse was buried, and there was a Israeli enclave or something on the top with a large Israeli flag on it. And to be honest, I was glad to see it. But you're walking up this concrete pathway, and it was trashy. It was like a trash dump. And I was really upset that I don't guess the Muslims care about the Christian holy sites that much. And I say holy site with reservation because we know, you know, the glory's in God. But then we went to see the tomb of Abraham, and when the Muslims conquered the area in 600 or something, they put this large building over it, probably about like this. So there lays Abraham, and on the other side lays Ruth, but they're under a Muslim building. And the Muslims, the third day I was there, I got the impression too, the Muslims are the interlopers. They have pushed their way in there, and they resent the Jews being there, but this conflict that's going on today, it started way back then. And the tour guides in this place had on pistols. A lot of them had on pistols because in Hebron, the streets are deserted. The shops are closed where the Jews used to be. From about in 1809, they bought some property there, and gradually they came and settled over the years. And then in 1929, the Arabs came forth one day and just massacred 70 Jews, just went in their houses and killed them. And we went to see, we went through a museum dedicated to that. And we were walking through the streets, and I told Brother Steve, the spirit of murder is laying over this place. It was sitting there looking at where Abraham is buried. You felt Islam sitting on your shoulder, and it's just dark. And the Orthodox of Jews, they're trying to get prayer boxes to put on your head because you're more holy if you got a prayer box. And that's where the tension between Islam and Christianity and the Jewish people really came home to me. Our father Abraham is laying in a Muslim building. And about 10 years ago, a radical Jew went in there and shot over 100 rounds and killed 29 Arabs who were there worshiping Islam. So it's a real tense place. If you go to see the tomb of Abraham, you're going to go into spiritual warfare like you wouldn't believe. And the tour guides have got on pistols. So that tells you. And did you know our guy had an equalizer in his pocket? So the guy that took us in there, he had a little something in his pocket. Joel, so me and Brother Steve stopped there on a hill, and we just prayed. And Brother Steve prayed the most beautiful prayer that God, the shops are all closed up, and you can just sense a bad place. And Abraham laying under a Muslim building, but we prayed that God would bring a revival to that city. And Steve prayed a good prayer. The sunshine of his love would flow into these streets again, and the shops would open back up. And then the next day we went to the garden tomb, and you actually look in there where Christ was laying. There's a big square slab in the middle of stone, and on one side you can lay a body, and on the other side you can lay a body. So they're not sure which one he laid in. But you're looking at the place where Christ laid, and what do? You spend some time there, and you have to go on, but he's not there, by the way. And then we went up, walked just a little further, and saw Golgotha, where they crucified him. And the bad thing, there's a bus station right below it with all kind of buses running in and out. And diesel fumes were drifting up over Golgotha, but that's just the way it is in Jerusalem for now. And then we went to see the tunnels underneath the city. King David and Solomon built up a lot of ramps and stuff on the outside of the city coming up into the city, and they were real splendor filled and everything. But when the Muslims came in the year 600 or 800, they covered everything up and built their houses. So the original part of Jerusalem has really been covered over by the Muslims. Then not far away is the Wailing Wall. Like I said, all those people are doing this. And then we went to eat and bought up some stuff and came back. But when I woke up in Winnipeg, one thing, when we were in the desert with Kelly and Yaron, they're real open and hospitable, and a young guy came in there, a young believer, and one other thing, there is a church in Jerusalem that had been there 10 years, and on Thanksgiving, the Muslims went in there and ransacked it, tore it up, jackhammered it, beat everything off the wall, and burned it. So it's like we never felt in danger, but there's just tension there. It just break, and there were fires when we first got there. But this young guy, there was a Jewish unbeliever there that Kelly and Yaron liked a lot, and he talked about being a Jew. So this young guy says, "Well, I'm more Jew than you because I'm a real Jew. What is a real Jew?" And he was real confrontational, and it didn't work. It turned the guy off. So you know you can get after the Jews if you want about who's a real Jew, but if you can speak the truth, but if you're not speaking the truth in love, it's not going to go very far. And everything got quiet, and our good pastor spoke for about 5 or 8 minutes about love, and the lowliness of Christ. And afterwards, the unbelieving Jew pulled our pastor aside and said, thank you, your words, I can receive your words, but I couldn't receive his. So if you don't approach the Jews with an attitude of humility, and like Adam said, they have a BS meter. They can pick up whether you're real or not in just a minute. But traveling on the roads, I used to get emotional just walking up down the streets, just be doing something. All of a sudden, I get a lump in my throat. And Cheryl told me that's God hooking you into this thing. This is the starting place of our salvation, and it's going to be the ending place. And the countryside there is just beautiful. And the first day when we went out, and I'll be through here in 3 or 4 minutes, when we went up to the Temple Mount the first day, I told Adam, "What the light up here? What is this?" And two or three times we were going along the road, and I would say, the light. There's just something just looks different here. And a couple of nights before we left, we were eating with a Jewish couple, and just in the casual conversation, she said, "It's been proven scientifically that Israel has the best quality of sunlight in the entire world." So, you know, let the light shine. If God blesses them like that, it's all right with me. So I've been to Israel, and I'm connected to it. The Jews, that land belongs to them. How can you explain people perishing in the Holocaust? And in 1880 and 1870, there were already 2,000, 3,000, 10,000 Jews a year going back. And it's increased since then. And I used to think, well, the Jews are there, but they're still full of pride and everything. It's a lot different when you're looking them in the face and they tell you what brought them there. And you have to sit back and say, that guy's not a believer at all, but God put in his heart to come to this land. I woke up in Winnipeg Saturday after we got back, and God said, let me put it together for you. I have a covenant with them, and I have a covenant with the land also. The land covenant involves the people, and God's covenant with the people involves the land, and there's nothing unspiritual about that. The Jews and the Hebrews never conceived of the kingdom of God without the earth, without the land. And it's just so awesome over there. It's just big rock, majestic mountains. We went up to Masada. Of course, that's a different thing altogether. But we stood up there, and you can just see it. Masada's about 18 and a half miles in the air. My knees hurt that morning, and Brother Steve said, "Come on, David." And I said, "Well, I can't lay behind." So, we got about 7 miles up there walking. Steve said, "We're almost there." I said, "Yeah, you know, only 9 miles to go." But and when we went to Caesarea, we went to the place where Paul confronted King Agrippa. And that it's just a real nice place. There's all kind of mosaics all over the floor. But the pastor looked after me. My knees would be hurting, and they'd be about from here to the door ahead of me.
You all right, David? You all right?
And he'd come back and put his arm around me. So this fellow looked after me over there. But as a church, as a people of God, we need to be connected to Israel. I'm not remotely ashamed. And I haven't even, the Bible studies we had in the morning were so incredibly good. I don't even know how. We're going to try to put together a series of teachings or something and try and remember them. But the last thing I have to say is Adam tried to kill us while we were over there. I'd been to Capernaum, and that's, I'll explain it. I think he got jealous of me because I heard Deuteronomy 18, and we went 2 hours later. That lady said, "I got saved when I read Deuteronomy 18. So I went, mm-hmm. So, I think we'd been to Capernaum the day before, and that's where Christ stood up and said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel and everything." And then right after that, it said he went out into the villages and everything and preached with signs. These signs, I said, well, these signs shall follow those that believe. If they eat any deadly thing or whatever, they'll speak with tongues, they'll heal the sick. Well, the next morning, Adam cooked us an omelet, and there was a jar of salt laying there, and there was this other jar there that was white and looked just like salt, and he put it all over the omelet and brought another to us, and I took one bite and said, "Boy." And then Steve took a bite and said, and I thought, well, he put some Israeli seasoning in there and cooked this olive in. And when you're in Israel, just, I don't particularly like it, but I'll just be polite. Well, there's something called citric acid that's white that looks like salt. You clean coffee pots with it and shower tiles. Well, Adam had sprinkled that all over our omelets. So, I just went ahead and ate it. I said, "That's Israeli seasoning." You know, Adam over there laboring for us, so he put citric acid on our omelets. And I looked over at Steve, we got to the end. Boy, he had a lot of honey on there. I got about 3/4 of the way through, and I cut up them last three pieces, and I said, "Lord." And Steve kind of messed around with that honey, and Adam comes over there with his omelet and sits down. And he took one bite and went, "Oh, what the matter?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Whoa." He said, "What happened to the omelets?" I said, "You're over there cooking them." Steve's looking around like this. So, Adam tried to kill us while we were in Israel. But these signs shall follow them but believe. If they eat citric acid on omelets, it will not harm them. So he went over there and found it, and she said, "I put citric acid on there." So we got on the computer or something, found out if it was harmful. So you need to tell Adam to tighten up when he gets back. But maybe sometime we can have a slide presentation, and if we could remember some of those Bible studies, and it wouldn't even be about Israel, it'd just be about spiritual things. And we found a lot of religion in ourselves. We're still trying to do a lot of things that God has already done for us. But I'm a little light on the pocketbook right now, but if you want to save up some money for a year or two and go to Israel, it's going to be worth it. You're going to love it. I'm connected to the Jewish people, and I'm connected to the land. Amen.